Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. I'm delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books. This is the time where we have lots of recommendations for good reads as the weather gets better. For some reason, as it gets warmer, people want to read more. I would think you'd want to cuddle up in February when it's dark and cold. I like to read all the time, and I'm sure most of you do as well. So if you're looking for something great to read, this is your program. I welcome Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Without her, there is no show. And her blog, which is indispensable if you love to read, is thelongestchapter.com. Robin Nesbitt is here. She is the director of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, the Hilliard branch, and she brings us the library's quick picks. Thank you, Robin, for being here. And it is my pleasure to welcome back, not a debutante, but somebody who has returned engagement after too long. Suzanne Jaffe is the former program director of the Thurber House, and she has not just published her two first novels. She's published like her 12th and 13th novels, but she has two new books on the market, La Patrona and Her Mother's Daughter, two new novels by Suzanne Jaffe. So let's begin with you. You've retired from the Thurber House. Catch us up.
Thank you very much. Well, yes, I retired and resigned, I guess, December 2015 after 14 years there, because I wanted to devote more of my time to my passion, which is writing. And I have been traditionally published, but this time I decided to try self-publishing so I could get the books into readers' hands more quickly. And so one is La Patrona, and the other is Her Mother's Daughter. And this is La Patrona is an urban crime drama about a woman who is at a crossroads of her life, gives new meaning to the words lean in. And the other, Her Mother's Daughter, you know, spans the globe. It's a woman's contemporary fiction going from San Francisco to Paris to the south of France to New York, set against the world of jewelry design. And there are lots of men. Mm-hmm. And a vicious mother, and it's a page-turner. And so thank you for letting me speak about them. I love writing them. They're available at Gramercy Bookstore on Main Street in Bexley, where I'll be doing a reading on June 16th. They're also available at Amazon, and you can go to my website, which is www.suzannejaffe.com to find out more. So thank you.
I just clocked you at 2.5 minutes. That was pretty good. My goodness, you didn't miss anything in terms of getting the information out there. I want to ask you, though, a little bit more about self-publishing, because your previous books were not self-published.
That is correct.
When you self-publish, whose responsibility is the distribution of getting the books to people, to stores, to websites, et cetera?
That's a brilliant question.
And I know. I'm real good at this.
I know you are. it depends with whom you publish. Amazon is the 200 gazillion pound gorilla. There are many other places that will print on demand. Ingram does this, Smashwords. But you want to go through CreateSpace, which is an arm of Amazon. That way the books get out there. CreateSpace will do the trade paperback, but it also then will link to Amazon. And then you can also do the Kindle version, which Amazon will handle. So the distribution is handled by the people that publish you. And I would recommend CreateSpace and Amazon if you're looking for exposure.
Are you looking to do audiobooks on these two?
It has been asked of me, and I would love to.
Let's talk a little bit about audiobooks, because I get a lot of questions from people out in the community about, I love my audiobooks. I have them in the car. I have them in the gym, whatever. And I know there's a huge market. Cassie Rose, what if any, is the difference between reading and listening?
Well, I think that in reading the hard copy of the book is that you can easily go back in and you can notate the book, or you can look back and reread something. Now, someone could say probably you could you aren't rewinding anymore, but you could probably search back. But, you're listening, so you're going forward and constantly, and you can't go back. Now, I'm not an audio listener, and not that I have anything against it. It's just that when I tried it, I started missing my exits. So I was late to everywhere I was going, and I thought, this is bad.
That's
I've got to let it go.
It's a good reason, though, to be late if you're engrossed in what's going on. I mean,
It is. But one time I missed my exit, and I was traveling, and there was so far to the next exit. It was just like, I've got to let this go. So really, that's why I can't do it. But also for me, I wouldn't be able to do it because sometimes I need to stop, and I need to linger over a paragraph I just read or stop with a couple words or think, why did the author do that, or did they miss something here? So it doesn't work for that kind of critical reading. Now, I don't think that, you know, that's probably necessary for a lot of readers. I have had many people come up to me and say that they read their books that are audiobooks, and I can tell they feel very shy about it, as if it's not real reading.
I've noticed that too, and that's unfortunate that people think that way.
It is, because I spoke with one woman recently and I said that's not the case at all. It's just another version of reading. We have the Kindle. You can read on your iPhone. You can listen to a book and you can have a hardbound copy. It's no different. I assume it's different in the way that it's translated in the brain or the way that – but it's still reading. And I think if that's the way you read, that's the way you read.
Still absorbing the story. Mm-hmm. Robin Nesbitt, let's talk a bit about you are the branch manager at the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library of the which remains, I believe, the finest library system in the country, Columbus Library,
yeah.
Yes. tell me about audiobooks for the library. I know there are walls and walls in my branch, Whetstone. Mm-hmm. They're making more and more room for audiobooks. People love them. And there's a reason that they're that successful.
Audiobooks are a strong market. And actually, libraries are one of the strongest markets for audiobooks. I mean, there is Audible now that you can subscribe to. That's kind of the premier audiobook product out there. But for libraries, we buy a lot of audiobooks. We buy them not only in the hard format, you know, a CD, but we also buy the e-audio. And actually, e-audio, I think, is really taking off because you can download that onto your iPhone, your iPad. I'm constantly showing people how to download, you know, onto their devices.
And show me sometimes.
I'd be happy to do so. And the other thing I was thinking about while I was listening to Cassie talk is that a lot of audiobook readers not only listen because of a title or because of the author, they also listen for the reader. There are a lot of people that will listen to a book simply because of the person reading. And that's how I am an audio listener. I tend to want to listen to somebody. Like, I just got done listening to almost all of it. Stephen Fry just redid all of Sherlock Holmes. Well, I'll listen to Stephen Fry read a phone book, you know? So I think a lot of people also pick up materials because they just like the reader. And it really is. It's people are busy. They can multitask while they're doing it. I have a lot of people come in and say, I travel all the time, you know, for my work. Guy said, I'm on the road two or three times a day, so I can just pop this in and listen to it as I'm driving. So
you I'm going to just divert you a little bit because I looked at the stack of books you brought us to discuss from the quick picks, and I just read Ill Wills.
Oh, good.
So tell us about this new book by Dan Challen, which I thought was – I couldn't put it down.
Yeah,
it was very upsetting and a really great read.
That's what I've heard. I haven't read it yet. I bought it for a couple of reasons. We did make it a quick pick at the library because he's also going to be at Maine Library in June. So we've started an author series. We just had Garth Stein last Sunday, which was incredibly well attended. We had 600 people. I'm sure Dan will get a lot of attendance. He is from Ohio. This Ill Will is upsetting. Everybody that I've talked to that's read it has really liked it, but it's, you know, the guy is a psychologist in suburban Cleveland. His brother has been just released from prison, and there's some serial killing going on. So I gather that it's a page turner, but a friend of mine, I just read her review, said really unsettling.
Unsettling. The brother was in prison for 30 years based on the testimony of his brother, the protagonist of the book. And he was innocent. DNA exonerated him. So there are all kinds of parallel difficulty in this book, and it's brilliantly woven together.
Right.
So I did read it, and I recommend it. But it's not don't take it to the beach and think you're going to relax and put your feet up, because it's going to pee you off.
Not for the faint of heart.
Not for the faint of heart. That's right. Suzanne Jaffe, I want to ask you, because you've been writing novels for a while. You've just published La Patrona and Her Mother's Daughter. You're teaching creative writing in Arlington. You've been on the you were at the Thurber House for many years. Where do you get your ideas?
I have so many that I don't think there's enough time to write them all. It's sitting here, ideas come to me. It's life. It's people. That's where I get my ideas. What's happening in the world, what somebody might say, being in a situation, it will trigger something. What if? what if?
Having written 13 or 14 novels and you worked at a demanding job for many years, where'd you find the time?
I don't sleep very well. I really don't. I'm an early riser. All my energy is in the morning. So that's when I work. Yeah.
Can you recommend a book to us right now? I mean, I'm recommending yours. You don't have to recommend your own. Her Mother's Daughter and La Padrona, two new novels by Suzanne Jaffe. But what else did you bring me
well,
today?
Well, I have three that I brought that I'd like to...
Just give me one right now.
Okay. Well, A Torch Kept Lit. This is phenomenal. These are eulogies and obituaries that William F. Buckley... Now, and this is not... Don't be political about this. Exactly. They are so beautifully written. He covers people. A lot of them were in his magazine, National Review. It's over the course of 20th century people, over the course of his career, and he covers everybody, people from Elvis Presley, whom he adored, go figure, to friends like David Niven, to people who weren't, he didn't like Alger Hiss and Nelson Rockefeller. It's the writing, the sentiment, and above all, the great intelligence that this man possessed. And so I do recommend it for a wonderful narrative nonfiction of somebody who is no longer with us, but his legacy lingers on.
I'm Boston Irish, and we do love our obituary, so I will probably get that book. I may probably enjoy that book very much.
Good.
And Cassie Rose, you have a recommendation by Colm Tóibín, who you and I discussed his Book of Mary, which was so beautiful.
Testament of Mary.
The Irish writer Tóibín, what's his new book about?
Well, he has a new book coming out on May 9th, and it's called House of Names. And he has again taken a historical situation, or it's Greek mythology, actually, with the story of Agamemnon and Clytemnestra. And I can tell you this is a riveting book. It is violent, and there's vengeance and betrayal in it. And if you know the story about Agamemnon and Clytemnestra and Electra and Iphigenia and their children and...
Very operatic. Many of them.
Yes. And Tóibín says at the back of the book, he says, this is based on his imagination. Now, the main players, which is the king and the queen and the children, are from the Greek mythology. But he adds his own characters. And while he has certainly read the dramas of Euripides and Sophocles and Aeschylus that wrote about this in Greek mythology, he's writing his own story. And it starts with the viewpoint of Clytemnestra, who is very angry that her husband lured her and her daughter Iphigenia to his war camp, thinking that Iphigenia was going to marry Achilles. Only his plan was to sacrifice, or is to sacrifice, Iphigenia to the god, so they will provide the wind that will get his warships across the water to fight the Trojan War.
So he's killing her daughter is what he
did.
Correct.
Yeah. He is killing the daughter, and she doesn't know this. And so from her viewpoint, and this is where Tóibín is so good and so unique, he can inhabit the mind of a character so well that you get lost. The present goes away. He did that with the Testament of Mary.
He
does this very well with this woman who also loses a child to murder.
It's called The House of Names. It's published this coming week, I believe.
A couple weeks, May 9th.
May 9th. So get on the reserve list at the Columbus Metropolitan Library for Colm Tóibín's House of Names. I'm Christopher Purdy. You're listening to All Sides Weekend Books. Later in this broadcast, not too far away, we're going to have an interview with Kate Hennessy about a new biography she's written about her grandmother, Dorothy Day. We will be right back. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. Today's edition of All Sides Weekend Books with Suzanne Jaffe, Cassie Rose, and Robin Nesbitt. Later in this segment, we will be having an excerpt of a recorded interview I did recently with Kate Hennessy, who has written a biography of her grandmother, the founder of the Catholic worker movement, Dorothy Day. But for now, I want to get back to Robin Nesbitt about the library and the new speaker series. You've had Garth Stein.
Correct.
Your next one is June 18th.
June 18th, yeah. So Dan will be there on will be there on June 18th. And then we have a couple more. And I don't have the dates right on the top of my head.
These are Sundays, right?
For the most part, yeah.
And the main library.
Yeah, I think there's one Thursday evening, but the three of them are on Sundays.
Yeah. Main library downtown.
Main library downtown.
Free?
Yes. Well, yeah. They go to our website, columbuslibrary.org. Yes, they are
Come
free.
Early, because the last
yes.
one you had 600 people
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get one more quick pick recommendation before we move on.
I actually brought a book that's been out for a while. It's a quick pick, but he, you know, Colson Whitehead, Underground Railroad, just won the Pulitzer. And the other reason I brought him is he's going to be in town. He's going to be at the Bexley Libraries hosting him this Friday, April 28th. This is a book that, again, I keep trying to read it. I get about halfway through and I just get so... depressed.
I thought it was magnificent.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
I
so
thought.
I just wanted to bring that because I think a lot of people think of Quick Pick and they think, oh, it's just these kind of bestseller, you know, but we buy all sorts of things for Quick Pick. So Colson Whitehead is still Quick Pick and still flying off the shelf.
Those are two substantial, that's a bad choice of words, but two, you know, not heavy, but they are substantial
yes.
novels.
Yes.
They're not quick reads.
Right, exactly.
They're quick picks because yeah. I think they're so popular.
Exactly.
And there's a reason that both of them have been on the bestseller list for months and months and months.
Correct.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Okay. Cassie Rose, you have Elizabeth Strout. Well, not here. You have one of her novels. I believe, is she coming to town? Or are you doing a reading of works of hers?
No, I am actually going to be hosting a book club at Gramercy in June 27th, I think it is, for her new book, which is coming out this coming Tuesday, Anything is Possible. And I've got her book here, My Name is Lucy Barton, because I had not read it and I wanted to read it because it's connected to this new book coming out on Tuesday. What she's doing in the new book is that she is going back to the small town in Illinois that Lucy Barton talks about in My Name is Lucy Barton. In this book, the Lucy Barton one, Lucy is in the hospital for an extended stay. Her mother from the small town in Illinois comes to sit with her. And in this very lyric and absorbing manner, Lucy talks about her past and her present and her breaking out of the small town and her becoming famous as a writer and well-known and the struggle she has with her mother and yet her yearning for the love of her mother. And there's all this hint in this book about Lucy Barton, about a childhood that something with her parents wasn't just... It didn't work. Something is off, and you don't know what it is. Like there's a phenomenon. She's afraid of snakes, and when she describes in this book why, about being in a truck all day, locked in it because her father is basically keeping her there just because he doesn't know what else to do with her, and there's a snake in the truck, it's like you know something deep and disturbing went on or difficult went on with the family. But she doesn't go into it in this book. And this next book, she's going – the author Strout is developing the characters from that town, the sister and the brother, and telling their stories. And I think we're going to get more about what happened with Lucy Barton. And she does make an appearance in one of the stories. The new book is written like Olive Kittredge, so it's a collection of stories that fall together like a novel.
Suzanne Jaffe, you were saying off mic that Elizabeth Strout's a favorite of yours. Your eyes kind of lift up. What is it about her work that
her
really
characters are just exquisitely drawn, memorable, and you always want to find out more. I'm delighted that the new book is a continuation because Barton left me with so many questions unanswered, and it was a departure for her to in a certain way because a female character and the relationship with the mother, and to see this continue, I think, will be very interesting. I cannot wait to read it.
Mm-hmm. Suzanne Jaffe, what is Rogue Heroes?
Well, I think once I was here, I mentioned this gentleman. Ben McIntyre is, I'm pretty convinced that he was a spy himself because he does spy, World War II spy craft the way no one else does. He's the author of Agent Zigzag, Operation Mincemeat, and he's just, everyone has been a bestseller. And this new one is called Rogue Heroes. The history of the SAS, Britain's special forces unit that sabotaged the Nazis and changed the nature of war. And actually, the SAS, the special forces from Britain during World War II, became sort of the prototype for all the special forces in armies thereafter. And it also delves, and only McIntyre does this so brilliantly, he delves into the character of the founder of the SAS, a man named David Sterling. And the people who made up this unit, including Sterling himself, a touch of the madmen. There's no question about it. These people were not normal because it wasn't even bravery. It was madness, the things that they did. But they were phenomenally reckless, absolutely, but brilliantly so. And this book, great pictures that from the archives. And McIntyre just makes history come alive. He is a fabulous, fabulous writer. And this is a story that we would not normally know. That's what he does.
If you have recommendations or questions for the panel, you are welcome to call us right now, 614-292-8513, or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. My guests for today's All Sides Weekend Book, Suzanne Jaffe, the former program director of Thurber House, author of her latest novels are Her Mother's Daughter and La Patrona. Cassie Rose is the book critic for WOSU. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. And Robin Nesbitt is the director of the Columbus branch, the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. And among the many things she does for us is to bring us to libraries Quick Picks. Quick Picks are popular books that are available for 30 days. 21 days. Mm-hmm. 30 if you're me and you,
right.
You're lazy.
Right.
21 days. 3 weeks.
Right.
You can't reserve them. They
right.
are they are books that you probably want to read. I have never been disappointed, even if I've picked up a quick pick of something that I didn't really know what it was. Give us another quick pick, Robin.
I've got Lauren Graham's biography, Talking as Fast as I Can. People may recognize her from her role on Gilmore Girls, but she's also an author herself and quite the book person. So this is just a book about her life, growing up, being an actress. With a funny little quote on the back, she says, included her tales of living on a houseboat, meeting guys at award shows, and that time I was asked to be a butt model. A hint, all three made me seasick.
I'm not going to ask you to repeat that because I – never mind. Okay.
Yeah. Lauren Graham, Talking as Fast as I Can. Again, this one's flying off as fast as you can get it because she is really popular between her role on TV. And then, like I said, she is a published author herself, novels.
I think I'm just too old. I just do. But it sounds wonderful, and I appreciate that. You know, that's the thing about Quick Picks. It accommodates so many tastes
right?
and
Absolutely.
So many age groups.
We've got something for everybody.
You do, and you have them packing into the library.
Absolutely.
You do, the Columbus Library mm-hmm. System. Greg Dodd, I hope you're listening. I'm giving you a plug here, and don't start with me. Anyway, let's talk a little bit more about Cassie Rose. I always have to look upside down at the. Okay, thank you. Minor Characters by Joyce Johnson. What is that?
This is not a new book, and I picked it up because someone in the New York Times wrote an essay about this book, which came out in the 1980s, I think it was. Joyce Johnson was a girlfriend of Kerouac for about 2 years, from 57 to 59, right around the time when he became famous with On the Road. So she wrote a memoir. And it's from the viewpoint, or she gives us the side of the women that were involved in the Beat generation. So Kerouac, Ginsberg, Burroughs. And it's, to give an example for, I was just reading in it earlier this morning because I'm just partway through it. And she tells a story about how Edie Parker was the girlfriend of Kerouac in the early 50s. And Kerouac at this time was out serving on the Merchant Marine, and she was going to a bar in the West End of New York, and she runs into Lucien Carr, sees him, decides she wants to meet him, and thinks, boy, he and Kerouac would get along really well. But Lucien Carr connected Kerouac to Ginsberg and to Burroughs. So you see –
And they became the Beats.
Yeah, so you see this, air quotes, minor character, a woman in the background – literally igniting it all. And also so many photos, like this one on the book it's a famous photo of Kerouac, but usually they cut out Joyce Johnson. So I haven't gotten all the way through it, but it's very good. It won the National Book Critics Circle Award. And the essay, what caught my attention was the person that was writing it was saying it's an overlooked memoir and that is very good. He gave it to his girlfriend for a present. And her first reaction was to be a little bit put off because, are you saying that women are minor characters? And he was like, no. You've got to read this book. It's a great book. So I thought, I needed to read it, too.
Minor characters, Joyce Johnson. Anybody interested in the Beats needs to read this book for a different perspective and really how it all happened, how it all came up, came together in the 1950s. Suzanne Jaffe, now you spent many years presenting authors and presenting books and fostering conversations about books when you weren't writing your own books. What do you read? What is your reading life?
For comfort food, mysteries. I just love a good mystery. There aren't enough good mysteries.
Can you recommend one off the top
of
your head?
Well, it's so funny. I actually have one. I don't have the book with me, but it's called Dr. Knox by Peter Spiegelman.
Oh, great book. Great book.
And it calls for a sequel. We must have a sequel. I call this sort of L.A. noir because it's a down and dirty area of Los Angeles. He's a humanitarian doctor, so he has this clinic where people who have no money, druggies, prostitutes, all these people, and he helps them out. And a child is left in his clinic. And I won't say anything much more about it except that he gets into a lot of trouble. He runs into a very, very nasty, powerful man. And the writing is wonderful. Spiegelman has written other books. He's a Seamus Award winner. But this one, I had not read him before, and now I will go back and read others. But this character of Dr. Knox and the setting in this L.A. noir mood, I do hope he writes another one. So I heartily recommend it.
Do you want a good mystery, Dr. Knox?
By Peter Spiegelman.
Peter, is it a recent book?
Last year.
Okay. Yeah. And Robin Nesbitt, you gave it a very
thumbs up. I heartily second that. Yep, absolutely.
All right.
I've
written that down. Now we go from mysteries to Dorothy Day. Dorothy Day was the founder of the Catholic Worker Movement. She was called an anarchist. She was called a communist. She spent her life trying to live out the works of mercy, feeding the hungry, giving a drink to the thirsty, caring for the sick, etc. The Catholic Worker Movement is very much in force today, many years after her death. She died in 1980. Her granddaughter, Kate Hennessy, has just written a biography of her grandmother, Dorothy Day, called The World Will Be Saved by Beauty, An Intimate Portrait of My Grandmother. And here are a few minutes of a conversation I had last week with Kate Hennessy. There's a new biography out on Dorothy Day, the co-founder of the Catholic Worker Movement. It's called The World Will Be Saved by Beauty, An Intimate Portrait of My Grandmother, and it is by her youngest grandchild, Kate Hennessy, who is my guest now. Welcome, Kate Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Christopher.
Dorothy Day and Peter Morin formed the Catholic Worker Movement in the 1930s. The newspaper, The Catholic Daily Worker, is still published. It still costs one penny. She said that the works of mercy, feed the hungry and clothe the naked, were at the center of her work. But she lived a modern lifestyle as a young woman, I guess you could say. Was she considered radical in her time?
Oh, she's always been considered radical. Certainly before she converted to Catholicism. But in the subsequent life, I mean, everything that she did was considered quite unusual, quite extraordinary, even though she did it within the teachings of the Catholic Church.
But what was her journey from a woman who was hanging out in bars with Eugene O'Neill to somebody who became a devout Catholic, a conversion? What was that journey, and did she change fundamentally after her conversion?
Well, it's a great question, and it's certainly all of us are fascinated by her journey. It's very complex. Even she herself said that she didn't quite understand her conversion, and she certainly saw it as not just one moment in time, but a lifelong process. She did live what she called a disorderly life as a young woman. She hung out with Eugene O'Neill, as you said. They were very good friends. She knew all of the radical famous people of the times of the 19-teens and 1920s and very much involved with the groups of that time. But she always, throughout this, had a real sense of God. There was always, you know, a presence that she felt. And people said of her, you know, her closest friends who were members of the Communist Party would say, oh, Dorothy will never be a good communist. She's far too religious. So this was, you know, clear to them from the very beginning. I think, you know, in terms of her conversion, you know, she the big turning point for her was actually the birth of my mother, Tamar, her only child. She had had an abortion 6 years earlier, and it had been very difficult and very traumatic. And one of the outcomes was she believed that she could never have a child. And then when she became pregnant with my mother, she was so full of gratitude that it really opened up this step to want to bring something greater into her life, a life of greater meaning. You know, to her, the birth of a child was a sacred thing that she was not going to squander. So that really set her on a path. But she never gave up that concern that for social justice, and that just then translated into the social teachings of the Catholic Church.
I should say that the Catholic Worker Movement dates, I believe, from 1933 with the first publication of the Daily Worker newspaper.
I'm sorry, it's called the Catholic Worker.
Catholic Worker, beg your pardon. I guess that's a bone of contention because she was called a communist even toward the end of her life. There were people who were kind of thought that she was dangerously radical in her political outlook because she was feeding the hungry.
Yeah, you know, there's many ways to kind of not agree with her. And I think one of the easy things to do is to call her a communist. You know, she was very loyal to her communist friends. She did not believe in dropping people because of views. And that always got her into trouble because she wouldn't, you know, condemn people for their views. She wouldn't condemn personally people, but even though if she would condemn, you know, beliefs that she felt were detrimental to society. But I think it's kind of easy to call her names. But you know, she was perfectly happy for you to disagree with her. You just sit down and have a conversation and discuss why you disagree with her.
That's an excerpt from my recent interview with Kate Hennessy, the author of a new biography of her grandmother, Dorothy Day, called The World Will Be Saved by Beauty. The entire interview will be online at WOSU.org at the All Sides blog site. It should be up this afternoon or shortly thereafter. So the entire thing will be there. We have to take a break. We'll come back in a moment with the final segment of today's All Sides Weekend Books. Don't go away. We are back for one more segment of All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose. If you want to know what to read, go to Cassie Rose's blog, which is thelongestchapter.com. Robin Nesbitt is the director of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and she comes to us with quick picks, and she comes to us with the new lecture series the library is doing. And if you want a real powerhouse of books and everything else, all kinds of media, you want to be part of the Columbus Library. And Suzanne Jaffe is here, the former program director of Thurber House. Her two latest novels are now in print, La Patrona and Her Mother's Daughter. Tell me a little. La Patrona's blurb says, a sizzling novel about a woman of today who creates a shocking new direction for all her tomorrows. Discuss.
Well, the heroine, our protagonist, is a highly decorated New York City homicide detective. Her family, her father, is the head of the most powerful East Coast mafia family. There's a little conflict there.
The dinner table conversations must not happen, probably.
And she has a brother she's devoted to who is murdered. And she is at this crossroads in her life between her loyalty, her family loyalty, and the difference that she has come to discover between the law and justice.
Should I ask you where you got this idea from? I mean, a mafia
no, you shouldn't.
Family?
Okay. No,
all right.
It was just an idea that what if I can't tell you the what if because that gives away the whole plot. But I was very interested in women in different kinds of leadership roles.
Now, Suzanne Jaffe, you've also been giving some courses in writing. Tell me about those.
I love teaching. I absolutely do. I had started the adult writing workshops at Thurber House, and they still are going on. And so I'm teaching a course at the Upper Arlington Lifelong Learning next Tuesday on the key basic elements of fiction writing, character, dialogue, etc. And then early in May, I'll be teaching a course there as well on writing prompts for creating scenes and character. And I just think it's fun to share. You know, a creative writer, you can't teach someone how to be a creative writer. You can teach them the craft. And I enjoy doing that.
And Cassie Rose, you've already convened a book discussion group at Gramercy Books in Bexley, which is the new bookstore in Bexley. But you're going back.
Yes, in June, on June 27th.
Is that the Elizabeth Strout?
It is the Elizabeth Strout book.
The new book.
And we'll talk about the new book, but also about how it works in with all of her books and the connection to Lucy Barton, the Lucy Barton book. And it'll be a very full and rich discussion, and I think we'll have a lot of fun.
I have an email from Dorothy. Maybe, Suzanne, you might know something about this. When I purchase a book, does the author benefit more financially from a physical purchase or an online purchase?
It's the same.
The same. Okay.
Absolutely the same. I'll answer the question. Traditionally, the royalty is the same. It's a contractual royalty arrangement. It's the same if you're doing self-publishing. There is a royalty arrangement. So it doesn't matter where you buy it. It's a certain percentage.
And I'm going to keep bugging you as a published author about what you are reading, and you've brought me another book to talk
this
about.
This is not current.
Okay, that's fine. Okay. I'm not either, so that's okay.
This is 2014. I'm a huge Francine Prose fan, and this is called Lovers at the Chameleon Club, Paris, 1932. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but I really highly recommend it. It's Paris. It starts out in the 20s, and it shows the city when it's just so full of life, and this Chameleon Club, talk about anything goes. Nothing is seen. What happens at the Chameleon Club stays at the Chameleon Club. And then it becomes the advent of the Nazis as they step forth. It also centers around a whole bunch of fabulous, very unusual characters. One in particular, her name is Lou Villars, and she's an extraordinary athlete. During this time period, she's also a cross-dressing lesbian, and then she becomes a Nazi collaborator. Yes, I know.
All in one book.
And there's much more.
Now, is it a novel? Or
it is a novel.
Okay.
It is a novel, but you just wonder some of this had to be based on
You can't
things.
Make this
exactly,
up.
Exactly. And, of course, prose is just a brilliant, brilliant wordsmith.
So. I'm always curious about how books come to people. I mean, you said you're a Francine Bros fan. She's well known, but she is not, you know, the biggest marquee name that we have. How did you get to Francine Bros?
Reading reviews, probably most of all the New York Times book review. Sometimes something will just hit you and go, you know what? The story sounds interesting. I may not even know the author, but the story sounds interesting. This happens a lot with Marilyn Stasio, who does the crime. Mm-hmm. I've not heard of the author, but, oh, I think I'll take a shot. So it's and word of mouth, of course.
Sure.
Somebody recommends.
And shows like this one, I don't mind telling you.
Yes, that's absolutely right.
And Robin Nesbitt, when you were here last, you said one of the top books on reserve at the Columbus Library these days was George Orwell's 1984. Mm-hmm. Now, that was about 6 weeks ago when you said that. How are we doing with 1984 and the reserve?
I think it's – I saw some copies the other day, so I think it's, you know, it's getting back on the shelf. But it's still – I mean, probably – I mean, not only for school, but, you know, obviously it's the current events kind of thing. So, yeah.
So people are still looking
to renewed interest in that.
That could almost be a quick pick, probably.
Yeah.
What do you have for us now?
I actually brought a book that is – I love it when, you know, these movies come out, but there's so many movies that are, you know, based on books. So I brought The Zookeeper's Wife, A War Story by Diane Ackerman. So this is now a movie that's out. I think it's it was at the Drexel. But yeah, she wrote this a few years ago. But I also wanted to show that with Quick Picks, we will go back and buy things because, I mean, this was not a bestseller when it originally came out. I mean, it got there, but we put this on Quick Pick because of the movie coming out. So this is about the Polish couple that kept at the Warsaw Zoo. And the Nazis came in and took the animals because they wanted to run experiments on the animals. And then this wife ends up hiding Jews in the zoo to save them. and to save animals. So I haven't seen the movie, but like I said, it's been flying off the shelf because I think a lot of people who see the movie then go back, well, I want to read the book.
I think the husband was a collaborator and the wife was not.
I think she was hiding or helping Jews escape.
I think that's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That looked. I saw the movie preview and it looked pretty devastating.
Right. I did see the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's very good. And if that's what's going on in the book, he's not a collaborator in the movie.
Okay.
But, you know, they could change it. But I will say about halfway through the movie, or even I thought I'm going to have to get up and leave because I have this thing with animals. Mm. You know, one of the things is do not, you know, kill the dog in a movie or whatever.
And I was saying
this to a friend of mine that was with me, and she said, Cassie, they didn't kill a dog. And I said, well, I have a new rule. Do not kill the elephant.
No.
So it's very, very – that part is very hard.
Don't hurt the children and don't hurt the
animals.
We're out of here. That's it.
But the movie's very good. But I just put that little disclaimer out there.
Right. Okay, but it's still a quick pick.
That means
enough people want to read the book
or
you wouldn't be doing that.
That's correct.
That's right.
That's right.
And Cassie Rose, how are we doing? Let's get another recommendation from you.
Well, here's a book coming out again next month. Jeff Vandermeer has a new book coming out called Born. People who loved the Southern Reach trilogy that he wrote last year, I want to just give them a heads up about this book. I'm about halfway through it. It is very good, but it doesn't have the grip that his trilogy had, especially the Annihilation book, which was the first one of that. This one's, again, if you're it's dystopian, actually, more than it is science fiction.
That's big now, right? Dystopian
yes, it
books
is.
Are very big right now. Yeah.
It is. So anyway, I misquoted. So it's dystopian in terms of the fact that there has been environmental devastation. There is a company, a biotech company, that is no longer operating, but some of its experiments are out there. And a woman, Rachel, is in a bunker-type situation with her partner, Wick, and they are in survival mode. And there is also a giant bear that is involved in this. And this is going to sound pretty crazy.
Nobody hurts the bear.
Nobody.
Okay.
Well, the bear is not good. I mean, the bear is so large that he
I
can't say this without laughing. He is so big that he flies.
Oh.
and he's so big that he, you know, can cover the stars. So, but it's a serious book. Anyway.
Get out of here.
So, but in the bear, so Rachel is, you know, the bear is sleeping. I'm going to lose it here. This is sounding ridiculous, but it's not. She, like, climbs on the bear, and he's sleeping and doesn't know this, and she finds this creature or this thing in the bear's fur, and she takes it home with her.
And another bear in the bear's fur?
This is something else. She thinks it's a plant. You need to read the book.
Okay.
And it's not funny. I don't know. But it sounds funny when I'm trying to describe
Cassie
it.
Cassie Rose has never in 10 years become goofy on this program until this moment. So you must read this book, which is, again, Jeff Vandermeer.
It's Jeff Vandermeer. And I have to throw in, there's a magician, too.
Okay. And the title is?
It's called Born by Jeff Vandermeer.
I'll just bet it is Born. Yes. Okay. Jeff Vandermeer. Thank you so much for that recommendation. Okay, I'm taking a deep breath here. From Dorothy Day to the bear with things in its fur. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are enjoying convening today's All Sides Weekend Books with Cassie Rose, who, again, what's on your blog right now, by the way, the longest chapter?
There is a review of a book called Imagine Waiting Only This, and it's a graphic memoir, and it just came out this week, and it's a stunning book.
TheLongestChapter.com. If you're ever looking for something to read and you really can't figure out what, go to that blog, TheLongestChapter.com. Suzanne Jaffe is here. She is the author of two new novels. And in a minute, I'm going to ask her what she's working on now. La Patrona and Her Mother's Daughter. And Robin Nesbitt is the director of the Hilliard branch. Lucky you folks in Hilliard, I might add, of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. She brings us the library's quick picks. Suzanne Jaffe, now you retired from Thurber House. You are teaching. But now you have more time for writing and you've got a couple of new ones out. So what's going on now? What are you working on?
Well, I'm actually working on two things. And thank you for asking. One is nonfiction because I also write nonfiction. And that's going to be pop culture. But I there's nothing further I can say about that. And then the new novel that I'm working on is very dark because I like dark. And it's about a son who turns into a murderer. And I can't go into much That's more, pretty, but it's based on a true story.
That's pretty dark, especially if you're the parents of the son and
it's
God
based
forbid
on
the
a
victim.
True story.
Yeah. All right. I want to go back a little bit in the time we have left to audiobooks, because there is such interest, and I don't know enough about audiobooks, and you folks do. Robin, you said that a lot depends on who's doing the speaking, who's recording it.
Mm-hmm.
So give us some favorites of the readers. I know a lot of A-list actors have done that, but a lot of people have become well-known for these audiobooks.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Off the top of my head, I mean, I can think of the ones I like. There's a guy named Simon Vance who I really enjoy. And other names are escaping right now. And then, like you said, there are famous. So Stephen Fry, the book that you were talking about earlier called Lincoln at the Bardo by George Saunders has just come out to great acclaim on audiophile or on audiobook because it's got 166 voices. If anybody's familiar with the book, there's all these different characters and they've literally, used different voices for all the different voices in the book. If you are an audiobook fan, I would highly recommend or suggest Audiophile. It's a magazine that does reviewing of audiobooks and it talks about not only the content, but it talks about the reader. And they tend to give out awards for not only the content, but the reading of the content. So they are paying attention to how well the person who is reading the book then, kind of evokes the sense of the book.
Mark Maxwell from Half Price Books was here a few weeks ago, and he was the one who brought Lincoln and the Bardo to this program.
Right.
And I have since read it, and I think you've read it as well.
I haven't read it yet.
No. A lot of people have read it. I was very, very attracted and compelled by it, but I can't really describe it in very, very well.
Right.
The premise is that Abraham Lincoln's 10-year-old son dies in 1862 during a party at the White House.
Right.
While the Lincolns have to receive everybody very formally, this little boy upstairs who has been ill passes away. He is buried in Rock Creek Cemetery, and Lincoln goes to visit his son's grave. And in the 2 hours he's there, people who are neither or are in the Bardo, they are neither alive nor dead, surface and comment all about not only about his grief but their own lives, and they fight amongst each other, and there are parts that are very funny. It is probably the most original novel I've read in years, and it's very hard to describe, but it's and I didn't know George Saunders, but apparently I've missed something because he's very well known. Is he not?
He's a writer's writer. He's the short story collection he wrote prior to this won almost every award you can think of, and I suspect that this book will nail down quite a few awards as well.
His short story collection is in my car as we speak.
It's 10th of December.
Yeah, yes, that's right. And I believe he's on the faculty of Syracuse University.
That's correct.
You high school guys who write, go to Syracuse University and check this guy out and study with it. Suzanne Jaffe, can you teach somebody how to write?
No.
Okay.
You cannot.
But you teach courses.
You can teach craft.
Oh, what's the difference?
Good point.
Well, writing is a passion and is an art form. Then it's like you teach them how to do dialogue or character. If they can do it and they do it well, then they've got the art. If they can't, all they've learned is the craft. It's a technique. But you can't teach somebody how to be a writer. You can teach them how to write.
It's like eating nothing but popcorn. There's no substance to it.
Exactly.
Okay, we have 3 minutes left. Each of you gets one more recommendation. Cassie Rose.
I think based on what we're talking about, the craft of writing, I'm going to recommend a book called Scratch, which recently came out. And if you are interested in being a writer, I would highly recommend that you look at this book, which is a collection of essays about a lot of writers pull the curtain back on this and the monetization of writing, what it takes and what they've been through.
Might scare you off for good reason, though. I mean,
it's sobering, but it's very well written. It's fascinating because people don't talk about money with books. How much they mean. You think if you're on the bestseller list, you're instantly rich, and you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of them are talking about it in their beginnings, and also in the middle, and then what it takes. When you have made it, some of the authors have written some eye-opening essays in this collection.
One more quick pick from the library.
So on a lighter note, My Not-So-Perfect Life by Sophie Kinsella. She has written all the Shopaholic novels. So if you're looking for a light spring read, summer beach read, this would be a good one to read, My Not-So-Perfect Life by Sophie Kinsella.
Suzanne Jaffe, one more recommendation.
Well, I had a very serious one, but I'm going to actually follow up with Cassie because in terms of writing, there's really – I use this in every class. It's Stephen King on writing.
That's a great book.
Forget if you're a follower of his fiction or anything. This book is a must-have for anybody who wants to be a novelist.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's famous for a reason. He's a really –
absolutely
good
correct.
At what he does.
Yes,
you know,
he is. So.
I thank you all. I'm Christopher Purdy, host of All Sides Weekend today for All Sides Weekend Books. My thanks to Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. My thanks to Robin Nesbitt, the branch manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library, for her quick picks. And to Suzanne Jaffe, who has come back and is going to come back again to All Sides Weekend Books. Her two latest novels are Her Mother's Daughter and La Patrona. Thank you, Shaila Nott, our producer. Thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend Books.